This is our instant reaction for I'm Thinking of Ending Things. I'm joined by the honorary co-host, the honorary third man of Binge Movies, the honorable Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. Thank you, sir. Thank you for the invite back to discuss this film. I'm not sure how much longer I'll be an honorable or honorary co-host after we get into this, but we'll see by the end of this recording.
You and I have an ongoing conversation offline, you know, apart from these podcasts, you know, where you come on or I do something for you or whatever. We've also had the privilege of talking about movies together off and on for 5 years now.
Wow.
We try not to predispose each other to, if we're going to do a combined episode, to what we think about the film. I got about 10 minutes into this movie, and I said, I had a flashback to maybe about a year or two ago. Wayne was busting your chops on your show, the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Your co-host, Wayne, was saying that, you know, well, Paul, you don't really like art house films or this, that, whatever. And I remember tweeting you and going, what's your problem with art house films and so forth and so on. And we kind of had a dialogue about it, and that dialogue may continue elsewhere one day. But it's near here or there. The point was, I got about 10 minutes into this movie. I had a flashback to that and some of our offline conversations. And lo and behold, I got a message from you. And so I was like, yep, I think I know where Paul's going to go with this. So for those that don't know, there's no way for us to talk about this movie without spoiling it, but this is a very hard movie to spoil. This is a movie that got picked up by Netflix. It debuted September 4th worldwide. It is directed by Charlie Kaufman, written by Charlie Kaufman. He was the writer on Adaptation and Eternal Sunshine. He was the writer on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I don't think somebody else directed that.
That was Michel Gondry directed that one. And
That's right.
Spike Jones directed Adaptation and Being John Malkovich, which he both wrote. And for the record, just to defend myself a little bit, I liked all three of those films, particularly Eternal Sunshine.
Did you see Anomalisa? Because I think Kaufman wrote and directed Anomalisa.
No, so I've never seen a previously directed Kaufman film, which is probably pretty telling.
This is based on a novel by Ian Reid called I'm Thinking of Ending Things. It stars Jesse Plemons, Jesse Buckley, Toni Collette, and David Thewlis. There's no real, you know, budget because it went straight to Netflix. They picked it up. So if you really want to go into this as a blank slate, do not listen to this. If you don't care, or if you did watch it and you're like, what the fuck was that?
You're not
maybe
alone.
This is the podcast. Maybe this is the podcast for you. Paul, you are Mr. Straightforward. You were super logical. You are Mr. Internal Logic.
Yep.
So I knew this movie was going to bother you. So tell me all the ways in which you hated I'm Thinking of Ending.
Well, there's some context here. I've coming off, you know, we've set the schedule to record this. It's out, as you say, September 4th. That's a Friday. So I come home after one of the longest weeks in my working life with some of the most stressful, heinous shit in my working life. And I sit down to watch this. And my first reaction when I turn this on is 134 minutes? The fuck?
It's long. It's 2 hours and 14 minutes long.
So, and instantly I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. All right, well, sit down. Who knows? And here's an assumption which is interesting. I thought in seeing the trailer once when we first talked about doing this, that this was going to be a film about a young woman contemplating suicide based on the title. Now, that's my lens which I saw this trailer because of my profession, working as a therapist. And so I started watching the film like this, and it honestly took me 20 to 25 minutes to realize, oh, she wasn't really talking like that. She was more talking about ending things with Jake, her boyfriend, played by Jesse Plemons. Except by the end of the film, I started to realize, actually, maybe I was right, and this actually is about someone contemplating ending things, except it's not her, I think, And boy, did I have to do a lot of thinking about this, which is not what I wanted to do on a Friday night after the worst week in my working life. I think it was more about the janitor, but I could be 100% totally wrong. It doesn't need 134 minutes to get where it got to. It certainly doesn't need to be put together in such a difficult to comprehend, abstract kind of way. I'm all for Kaufman in his meta-ness. I like those elements. I like the moment, for example, where it breaks out into a Robert Zemeckis film and then suddenly cuts back to what's going on in the movie. But this just feels to be like it's being obtuse for being obtuse's sake. It's Kaufman, to my mind, saying, wow, how clever and deep am I? But if you haven't read this book, or you're watching it at 10 o'clock on a Friday night after a really rough week, or you're just dumb, because that might be me too, this is a difficult film to like, and it's almost impossible, to my mind, to make sense of in one straight viewing.
I love this movie. I was 10 minutes into it, and I knew nothing about it. I wanted to be an absolute blank slate for this film. I didn't know nothing of the background. I knew Kaufman was involved, so forth and so on. That was it. I saw the trailer. I sent it to you. Said, are you going to watch this? And do you want to talk about it? That was it. And that was basically the extent of our conversation. The prose of this script was so obviously, it felt like a dense novel, just the way the characters speak. And it turns out it is a novel. And so I was like, this feels very literary in the prose and in the dialogue and the way the characters speak and the references and so forth and so on. And I thought, based on the trailer, that it was this girl, the young woman, played by Jessie Buckley, that basically she was somehow experiencing all moments of time throughout the duration of a relationship and lifespan of a relationship and the lifespan of a human being, kind of at the same time in sort of this mishmash way. Because there's a theory in physics that, you know, obviously time is not linear. We only understand it to be linear, and actually all moments are happening simultaneously. So I thought it was going to be like that. I thought that was what was happening. It took me up until the scene. I started noticing, like, wait a minute, that poem is familiar. Mm-hmm. That language is familiar. That quote is familiar. He's anticipating what she's going to say before she says it. And then there were some things that were happening, and I was like, I began to ask myself the question, okay, who is the main character? Whose story is this really? Because the movie opens up with Jessie Buckley's character, whose name is constantly changing, her profession is constantly changing, her reason for needing to leave this dinner party is constantly changing.
Her look changes as well.
Yeah, her look, her personality, everything. Yeah. There's a base. The base story is a couple that's been dating for a couple of months. The young man, the young woman, they have this amazing connection, but she's thinking about ending the relationship because she doesn't see it having a future, and yet he wants her to meet his parents, and they drive out to the country during a snowstorm, and she's got to be back for various and changing reasons that night, and things get weird when they go meet the parents. Things get weird as soon as they get in the car, and it kind of starts off semi-normal and just gets stranger and stranger and stranger. And the performances are bizarre. The editing is bizarre. Mm-hmm. Her arm will be around him in one shot. They'll go to the reverse shot. She's across the room. There are these leaps, apparently, in time. Characters will rapidly age and de-age almost at random. And, you know, her name changes. They refer to her as different things. She's having a hard time keeping up with everything that's happening. And she almost never questions. She's our on-ramp into the movie, but she almost never fully questions the strangeness. She kind of does, but other things she just goes along with. At one point, she legitimately shifts into at the beginning of the movie, she talks about people's obsession with movies, and movies are lies, and they're filling our heads with bad ideas, and it's a societal malady that people are obsessed with movies. And then in a car ride, this movie's basically bookended by two car rides and a dinner scene in the middle. And it's all bizarre. And on the second car ride, after on the first one she denounced movies, she goes into a full-blown recitation and imitation of the New Yorker film critic Pauline Kael.
Right. I didn't know who that was.
Her review, yeah. So, it's like, okay, what clicked for me was, when I was asking myself the question, okay, whose story is this really? Whose movie is this really? Very quickly put together that the janitor is Jake. And I didn't understand, okay, are we experiencing multiple streams of time at once? Or when, you know, everything that is about her, no matter what it changes to, is also a reference to him. And then I quickly was like, oh, she doesn't really exist. She's not real. And what this occurred to me, and what I think this movie is, point blank, is this is a man who is either having a nervous breakdown, committing suicide, or dying from hypothermia, or killing himself via hypothermia, because part of hypothermia is your nerve endings become so seared from the frost that you actually feel like you're overheating and you begin ripping your clothes off in the snow.
Yeah, and that's because, sorry to interrupt you there, that's because our nerve endings are incapable of determining the difference between extreme heat and extreme cold after 50 degrees. So when you are getting burnt, it can feel like it's super cold too.
Yeah, the correct. So I think what it is I think he's Jake. And I think when he says at the beginning, when Jesse Plemons says, you're the idealized, beautiful woman, I think she is this idealized woman. Maybe he knew, maybe she's just a figure of his imagination. And basically what she is she's a representation of all of the media and the art and things that he's consumed. Because when she goes into his bedroom, there's the Pauline Kael, classic Pauline Kael book on film criticism with all of her reviews and her thoughts about film criticism. And it's there because he's always reciting other people's ideas. And there's physics books and there's movies. And everything's labeled. And the art, which she shows people her work, and it turns out it's a famous painter's. And her version of it was actually Jake's version of the famous painter he painted as a child. So I think she's an extension of him. I think his parents are already dead because he's elderly. I think he's dying from the cold, potentially, because there's an after credit deal here.
Oh, was it? I missed that part.
yeah. I'm sure you immediately turned it off.
Uh-huh.
I think that essentially all of his life memories and the emotional things that are happening inside of him are all happening at once. And so I think the reason why he sees his parents as these bizarre idiots is because I think he was a smart kid that grew up on a farm with simple people, and that's how he emotionally interpreted them to be. Mm-hmm. I think he saw and resented his parents for being idiots, and his life was limited because he was a smart kid who was an outcast and an outsider and was mocked, and basically could, for whatever reason, couldn't make very much of his own life. And so these are the last, basically this is his brain misfiring as he's dying, and it's all just a mishmash of impressions and things that he's consumed and art that's influenced him and ideas and quotes and media and movies, the Robert Zemeckis movie, and his idea of the idealized woman, which he never had, and all these sorts of things, and ideas about his parents and then their death, and it's all happening in this sort of very abstract, loosely strung together way. So I think it's all of this like dense referential sort of stuff, abstract, and I think that ultimately I think there's a bunch of other layers that are in there that mean a lot of different things, but I think at brass tacks that's what this story is. Did you gather that, or do you feel like I'm overreaching, or do you feel like I'm way off?
No, I didn't get he's freezing to death in the snow, so I missed that. My interpretation was very similar, though, that it was someone at the end of their life that I thought he was about to commit suicide, and he was reflecting on his life and reflecting. It was almost like a fantasy of why or what he wanted to get that he never got in terms of this girl, as you say, this idealized girl who switches professions and has all the interests he has. So, and that moment came to me when she was in his childhood bedroom and she's seeing all the books and like along that. In his bookcase, and it's all the stuff they've been discussing. So, as well as, of course, you know, she's at one stage claiming to be a photographer, and all those photos are in the basement of the house, along with a whole bunch of janitor clothes and the rest of it. So, yeah, I certainly got that it was eventually that it was the janitor who was really the point of view character. didn't realize that maybe he already was dying. It was all, and that's better. It's a better interpretation than just he's about to die. And why is he going so weird? And why do we get a stupid musical number? And why is Oklahoma so featured through this film? Which that also did my head in. I hated the last 20 minutes. I was borderline like, eh, it's not for me, but I understand why people are liking this. And then the last 20 minutes is like, how much weird shit can we just throw at the wall? How much will people tolerate in the name of art? That's what it feels like to me, this film. And I fucking hate being spoken down to like that.
See, I didn't think it was, I didn't think it was speaking down. I think, honestly, I think that the, there's the idealized Jake and there is the idealized woman, but the janitor, it tries to take the girl away from him. And in trying to defend this idealized woman against this older janitor version of himself, the janitor kills him. So it's almost like a Fight Club kind of thing. Where no, but for
how
real,
dare you compare these films?
No, but it's a very similar thing because it's a delusion, right? And so the janitor is who he is, right? And it, but it's not who he wants to be, because he's obviously a dude who's full of control issues and delusions and aspirations for a better life. And he obviously had some kind of intelligence, or at least imagined himself as being intelligent. He's obviously well-read. He's obviously well-studied. But he's a janitor who's working in the high school that was the source of endless years of torment to him.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
And he never escaped. And so he's like that.
Yeah, he never escaped. And he spent his entire life facing the recrimination of the beautiful people, right? The hard and beautiful people, right? And so he's lived his life in this hell. And so, like, the evil version of him or the bad version of him is that janitor figure. He's imagined himself as a younger man, remembering who he was and imagining that his life had gone in kind of this other direction. And, yeah, the idealized woman and, you know, his emotional impressions of his parents always fighting and being dullards and, you know, and then having to take care of them. And he lives a sad, melancholy, lonely, broken life. And I think these are his last moments. The only part of it where the cartoon pig with the maggots coming out of its belly, that's like, I'm a ghost and now you're a ghost too, potentially. Like, that was like, you should go put some clothes on. You'll be safe here. Like, that was a little bit much, but the musical number I thought was actually kind of beautiful. I think it was probably that, and there's one or two lines in the film, and that number is like, oh, okay, that's what this is really about. I think that's as close as he gets to being like, that's what this is. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anything about the novel. I don't know if the novel is this dense or if this is, you know, an adaptation, no pun intended, where Kaufman's putting his own spin on it.
I think it's the latter from what I've read. Because I haven't read the novel, but from what I understand, based on people who have, it's a lot clearer in the book what's going on, whereas this is made more obscure and it's less easy to get there.
Well, would you be in agreement with me that she does not exist?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I think, she's an amalgamation of everything that he loves and everything that he was interested in.
Yes.
But never found in his life, right?
Which is why she switches careers and interests, and why everything that she says he keeps up with, and sometimes he takes great pleasure. And that's the other thing, that even in this final moments or perverse kind of reflection on his life and what he missed out on, even there he wants to be superior to her, which is kind of a disturbing undercurrent to this film, which now that I realize what's going on, or having realized what's going on by the end of the film, I don't know. It kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth as well. Even then, he can't allow it to sort of play out the way that, if it's going to be idealized, then they should get along. He shouldn't be like one-upping her and showing how superior he is to her. That I didn't appreciate that too much.
Well, I don't think you're supposed to. I don't think he's like the protagonist. I don't think he's a good guy. I think that he's a controlling. I think he's a misanthrope. I think he's a controlling outcast who's been bullied his whole life and feels an intellectual superiority, but then feels degraded because he's had to work as a sanitary engineer, janitor. And, you know, he's like an elderly man who despises the children in the high school, you know, like he's twisted. I think that's the whole point, is he's a twisted person. And Yeah, so even in his idealized version with his idealized woman, his idealized woman is quickly losing interest in him,
yep.
Right? His fantasy woman is going to dump him. And yeah, they're constantly kind of, it alternates between sort of charming banter between the two of them to then kind of like, I mean, I'm going to be really honest with you. I think that especially the opening car ride where it's surreal but doesn't go almost fully surrealistic like it does in the second car ride, or actually once they get to the house, it feels like a lot of dysfunctional relationships that I've either been a part of or have seen, where it's like they are attracted to each other, but there's this undercurrent of there's something not simpatico here. They're not, they should get along, but there's some kind of incompatibility here, you know, between these two people. The idea that he's kind of incompatible with himself is a very interesting idea, because she's doesn't really exist. So to me it's a movie of abstraction and impression and emotion more than it is linear point A to point B plot points.
Of course, there's nothing. What did you think about them at all?
No. What did you think about the performances? Because to me, I mean, Toni Collette's being Toni Collette. We've seen her do this sort of stuff before, and she's great at it. David Thewlis delivers what is probably the most comedic performance in the film, but I don't know that a lot of people say, like, this is the most hilarious movie. I didn't really laugh. I found it disturbing and depressing and I felt like I was entering the mind of a dying crazy person. So mission accomplished. But I wasn't like, this is hilarious. I don't know that it was supposed to be funny. To me, I didn't read this as like being John Malkovich 2, where there's like this, there's absurdity in it, but the absurdity is kind of ratcheted more towards melancholy and toxicity.
Yeah, I would agree. I think everything in this film is designed to be off-putting from moment yes. one, the way that the opening shots are. Even the title font of the credits is tiny. Like, you got to almost lean in to see what is it saying there. And again, at the end of the film, with as far as I got the credits, which was about 6.5 seconds, the font's again really, really tiny. And then there's all these stilted shots while her voiceover is, you know, I'm thinking of ending things. You know, he's this, he's that, he's whatever. We have such a passionate connection, but I'm thinking of ending things. So straight away, it's like she's all over the shop. She's weird. There's these shots of the swing set and you know, some man in profile and a whole bunch of other things. And they're all sort of slightly not the way you would film them, so to speak, in center or foreground or background. So technically, it's already putting you off kilter. And then the conversation between them in the car on the way out to his parents' house only exacerbates that. And like you say, it's the editing choices, the shot choices, none of it flows naturally like a normal film. And
it's very mannered. All of it is the performances, everything's very mannered and affected. Even the way Jesse Buckley, who I think is Irish, even just the way she kind of holds her mouth and the way she kind of gesticulates, everything about it is very like intentionally off-putting.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the performances
if you don't,
are the same.
If you don't like the first 10 minutes of that car ride, which seems to go on for about 40 minutes, both car rides,
get out.
You're out. You're not going to like it. You're not going to like it any more than that. To me, I got into kind of the lyrical nature and the literary nature of the prose of the dialogue. So I was like, once I got on the wavelength of it, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I kind of see where this is heading, and I can vibe to this. Sure. But if I were in your shoes and I was having, if I worked in the mental health field and I had the worst week of my professional career during a global pandemic, I mean, this is not the movie we need in 2020 right now. This is a dour, cold, bleak, sad, distorted, delusional film. This is not like, fire this up, it's going to lift your spirits. It'll break your spirit, probably.
No, 100% agree. Yeah, I just,
It reminded me of, have you ever gone to like a postmodern, like experimental theater almost, you know, or even seen a postmodern production of a play where it's kind of stripped down and everything is like intentionally kind of affected a little bit. And it's almost like while they're doing a play, they're almost kind of doing a commentary on plays, and every character seems like they're almost in their own play. That's what it felt like. It felt like postmodern dance or postmodern musical, or, you know, just, yeah, it seemed to want to just kind of fuck with you just for the sake of fucking with you, just to make you feel bad.
Yeah, and I think there's also a lot, as there is with a lot of Kaufman scripts, there's a lot of him in here as well, a lot of his neuroticism and a lot of his insecurity.
Yes.
And I think if you've, and I haven't seen Schenectady, New York, nor Anna Melissa, but I've seen the other three we spoke about earlier in the review, and that's the theme through this neuroticism, this disconnection from other humans, or I'm unhappy with myself and I want to be better, I want to do it better. And that's no more better represented than Adaptation, which is a great film. And that's the kind of layering or weirdness that I really get behind. Same with John, being John Malkovich, whereas Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a bit more straightforward, even though it's told non-linearly, the ideas are a lot more simple. But they're all playing with that idea of his insecurity. And I think that is really resplendent throughout this film. And I just wish it was told in a more straightforward way. I wish it was told without trying to come across so weirdly off-kilter and, oh, no, I can't just tell this story. I think the idea of, had it been told as more of a, you know, they were a bit more realistic with each other, was a bit more grounded, and there was weird shit happening for sure, and she was freaking out at the way that the parents were changing, all that would have worked for me. And then had the revelation been, oh, actually, it's the janitor and this is whatever else, that would have worked better for me as sort of a more straightforward, thriller / psychological thriller. And then the revelations at the end could have been told without going down really weird symbolism. And I've never seen Oklahoma, so I do not understand how that fed into things so heavily. I'm sure you have a better idea than me.
I don't. I know that Oklahoma is referenced a lot in literary work because it's a extended metaphor for a bunch of different stuff. But that's a blind spot in my knowledge. So I'd like to go down that rabbit hole and figure that out, because it's something that gets referenced a lot. And so it has to mean, there has to be some kind of more symbolic meaning to it in the art world that I'm just, that gets lost on me. To me, I think that I think it would have been less interesting if it was straightforward, because I think it wouldn't make sense if this is either a delusion or a hallucination or the psychotic break of this elderly man who's already kind of off his nut, or if this is the dying last flickers of synapses in a man's mind, I wouldn't expect it to be linear, because it's kind of flashpoints of his entire life, and it would be random chunks of information that have been processed by his brain that just comes kind of vomiting and spewing up and crashing into each other. So if it had been more linear, and at the end it would have been like, well, and these were his final thoughts before he kills himself or before he has a stroke or something, that to me would have been like, it's like the Hollywood ending where it's like, and it was all a dream. It's like, well, that was, you just wasted my time. It could have been tightened up. You could have done it in a way where the surrealism kind of escalated, but it kind of stays at a surrealistic level, and just sort of, once it's there, it just kind of stays there. And there are maybe some peaks and valleys and stuff like that, but for the most part, it's just like bizarre. Kaufman is very much into garish characters. He gets Cameron Diaz at the height of her beauty and is like, we're going to put you in being John Malkovich and you're going to be as ugly as possible.
True.
You know, he likes these sort of greasy characters whose clothes are like ill-fitting and don't match, and the colors are always garish. Like, they're, even the production design of the farmhouse, there's nothing comfortable or pleasant or warm or inviting about that farmhouse. It looks dirty and uncomfortable. Everybody's clothes are sort of ill-fitting and mismatched, and no one is pretty. Everybody's ugly down. Mm-hmm. I assume that is maybe how he feels about himself bleeding into the material.
That's what I was going to say. I reckon that's a reflection on the filmmaker.
Yeah, and I get the, there's a weird thing where she's the ideal woman, but she's kind of offhandedly homophobic. I don't know if you picked that up.
No,
he's always like, he's always correcting her of like, well, you know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We don't, you know, we shouldn't really, you know, there's nothing wrong with homosexuality. That happens like 3 or 4 times. I'm like, what is that a commentary on? Mm-hmm. There's the one thing where I was like, I can't connect this piece was when they're in the school and she's talking to the janitor. And before the interpretive dance that you hated, he says, she's telling a story which sounds like a story of which she maybe was sexually assaulted, potentially, or some guy made her uncomfortable at a bar. And then it made me wonder, was like, was this a woman when he was young, he saw in a bar, and he was the creeper? Mm-hmm. And... because she's like, he was a creeper, and he was just, because the way the story is told is, I saw him watching me at trivia night, and he was like so pompous and so arrogant, and he said he was a verbalist, and he was this, and he was that, but I knew he wasn't going to approach me, so I had to approach him and give him my number, get his number, or whatever it was. But when a story gets retold at the end, it's, I was getting drinks with my girlfriend, and this guy, this creeper, was looking at me, and I wish my boyfriend had been there with me to tell him to fuck off. But then, does that mean that I'm some other man's property? The only way men don't look at you as like a sexual object is if you're the property of another man. And so some of that dialogue was, so I wonder if she was just some fleeting person, and he was the creeper. You know, he wasn't the boyfriend to rescue her. He was the pervert that made this girl uncomfortable, you know.
Well, I've got something here that basically shed some light on that, so I'm not pretending for a second this is me. But this comes from an article in Vanity Fair, and it says, the book version of events is a little gentler. Jake, as a cripplingly socially awkward young man who rarely leaves his house, meets a young woman during a game of trivia in a bar one night, and she smiles at him, but he doesn't have the courage to give her his number. Would anything be different if she had his number, he wonders, in the novel during the final minutes of his life. So there you go.
Oh, well, okay. See, that's where I was sort of like, oh, okay, maybe he was the creeper. And then it seems as if I think in the film he was, and the janitor is almost like taking her, and it seems like he might rape her. And then the other Jake shows up and stops him, and then is killed by the janitor. So I think it's like this idealized version of him versus the real version of him, which he's a creep, because even the girls in the high school are disturbed when he's around, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think he's like this misanthrope, weird, like not mentally all there pervert, but who, you know, he's like a antisocial guy who has delusions of grandeur and delusions that he's this genius, you know, and resents his family and resents the girls
holding him back. And he never got out.
And but these are maybe his dying thoughts. I'm not really sure. So I didn't expect it to be a thriller. I didn't expect it to be funny. And I just expected it to be bizarre. And it was. And I like one good bizarre movie. I like one, like, if, you know, I look forward to my one Ari Aster or my one, you know, some kind of fucked up movie for the year. This was the fucked up movie for the year. And I found it delivered for me. I liked the performances. I liked Jessie Buckley. She seemed exactly like a girl I would date. at least one version of her. I've never dated Pauline Kael, but maybe we could conjure her spirit up, so that would be interesting. You should be a great co-host on Binge Movies. Me and the spirit of Pauline Kael, the next episode of Binge Movies.
Look out, world. That one, you better strap yourselves in. That could go for a while.
It wouldn't be a podcast without Paul unless he busted my chops on my own goddamn show. One of these times, we're going to have you on. You're going to have to watch a movie you actually enjoy, my friend.
Yeah, well,
I do like you, Paul. I actually like you as a human being.
But to be fair, you hadn't seen this one before you said, let's do it. So you were hopeful that I would like it. So I don't hold this one against you like I do Going Bananas and that crew of films.
That's the thing. It's like, I really do like you. And I feel like this is beginning to strain our personal relationship. So As a therapist,
I'm the guy who has fallen short in this review. I think your take on it is far more appropriate for a film critic. I think mine is very much it's too hard. I'm having to think too much. It's too oblique. God damn you, Kaufman, for making me sit here for 2 hours and 15 minutes of this shit. I just wanted something that, you know, built on the promise of the trailer, which was things go obscure and weird, but not so obscure and weird that I have to spend hours trying to piece together what was going on and then just give up and start reading online about it.
Yeah, well.
I should have said, no thanks, Jason. You do this review yourself. I'll just listen to your spoiler film review. It would have all been perfect.
That's bullshit. No, that's bullshit. I think that film is subjective. This sort of thing is not necessarily in your wheelhouse, typically. It's just not how your brain is. It's not an intelligence thing. It's like you're a very deductive reasoning sort of guy, which is why I like your takes and like having you on the show and having these conversations with you online and offline and, you know, via messages or whatever, because I just, you know, you offer a different voice and a different perspective. So I would ask you, but here's, I also wonder if the world wasn't presently burning down around us. And if you hadn't worked in a field where you deal with legitimate mental health issues, mm-hmm. and was having a hellacious week, and would you have enjoyed this a little bit more than you did?
I think it's quite possible.
Yeah, and you know, we can't change that about ourselves because it is subjective. And you know, there have been movies that I've watched and hated the first time and just didn't get, but maybe, you know, 10 years later revisited and loved, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate you revisiting this in another decade and being like, you know what, this was a work of genius and I missed it. But, you know, when I ask you, would you recommend, I'm thinking of ending things, what would you say to our binge lords who are listening at home?
Only if you're up for this kind of thing. If the complexity, if you want to be really challenged, and I know you haven't had the opportunity to see it yet, Jason, but the challenge of a film like Tenet, which is obviously far simpler, don't get me wrong, but you have to get your head around it, or a film like Inception, which I know you hate or don't appreciate that much, to understand that that's the kind of challenge I appreciate in a film. Or I like psychological thrillers, and I will take a little bit of umbrage at I don't like art house films. I do like a portion of art house films. That's just not what I gravitate to as my natural cinema watching proclivities. But if you don't want to think hard, if you don't want to have to sit here and really concentrate and try and piece things together and understand where that quote came from or that reference is coming from, absolutely don't bother, because this is not going to win you over through the course of the film. You either are on board for it or you're not.
I would 100% agree with that. I would 100% agree. I think you have to be in the right frame of mind. I think you have to be you have to be in a place emotionally to handle it. I'm seriously though. I think if you're kind of in a down place, I would say steer clear of the movie, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Because it is successful in affecting you in a negative way.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
Garish. It's uncomfortable. It's grating at times purposefully. And if you watch movies and you simply want to be entertained and you want an escape, this is not a film for you. If mm-hmm. you watch movies and you like literary dialogue and you like surrealism, and it's almost more of like a art installation piece that, as opposed to a entertainment film, if that makes any sense. It's almost it's almost something that you would watch like in a museum, than it is, and it's like a true art house movie, I guess. And if that's kind of your thing, and you don't mind the surreal and the abstract, and you're in an okay place in your life, then I think that this is probably the movie for you. But I would totally understand, like with you, Paul, I totally understand if somebody's like, I fucking hated it. When you know, there was something on Twitter and at Binge Movies, and I tweeted out, like, 50% of people are going to not finish this movie and hate it. And be like, what the fuck was this? And the other 50% are going to be like, genius, right? And that split may end up being like 60-40 one way or the other. But I think that's, this movie is going to divide and split audiences. It divided and split film reviewers here on this bonus feature. And I think that's, I think that this is one of those cases where I can't be like, you're wrong, Paul. Your taste in movies is shit. You missed this, you missed that. because it's so mannered and it's so affected that it's intentionally constructed in a way to split the audience.
Yeah.
So, you know, if everybody liked it, I'd be like, I don't think that was his intention, you know? So I think it's successful on that level. I don't want to belabor the point too much. I would recommend it, ironically, with the exact same caveats that you have for maybe not recommending it as much. So I don't think either one of I don't think either one of us is wrong in this particular review. I don't. I think that we both I think everything you said is 100% credible.
It's very generous of you. As I said, I think your take on it is far closer to what Kaufman intended, and I think you've read the film accurately, as much as I understand it, which is obviously not that well.
And I still think I'm missing stuff. I think I got like the basic gist of it, but that's just because this type of movie kind of speaks whatever disjointed language my brain has. So whatever, maybe I'm afflicted with whatever Charlie Kaufman's afflicted with. Except for his hatred of women. I think he might have issues with women. Definitely moms, and I think definitely love interest. I think he's very much into these like broken, idealized women, like Clementine, you know, and these very nebbish, broken, weird, resentful...
Neurotic,
you know, dudes with superiority complexes. So...
There you go.
That's not all your. Right.
Are you gonna give it? Are we giving it a score, or are we just gonna leave it at that?
I'm leaving it at that. I don't think you. How the fuck do you score this? I would recommend it with all of Paul's caveats, and Paul would not recommend it with all of Paul's caveats.
Yeah, pretty much. Again, unless you're really up for this, in that case, go for it, and I hope you have fun. That's the wrong word. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. I love this movie. I will tell you, you are not going to have fun. I didn't enjoy. Very many moments of it. I did enjoy the dialogue, though. So, on that note, that is our instant reaction to, and are really trying to decipher and give our best impressions of probably one of the most obscure, dare we call it mainstream? I don't know. It's definitely a Netflix is kind of making a push for this movie. I anticipate it winning no awards. It's interesting. It's on Netflix. You got Netflix. If you listen to this and you're like, that sounds good, check it out. If you hate it, don't blame me, because Paul was right. If you love it, then I'm a genius. So, all right, Paul.
That's a perfect note to go out on.
All right, Paul. Where can the good people who are listening at home, where can they find you? Where are you normally at? And what sort of movies do you normally talk about over on the countdown?
Well, this week we're reviewing Bill and Ted Face the Music. So...
There's your comparison. Yes, but I've been in a legitimate Twitter war with the writer and co-creator of Bill and Ted all fucking week, because you're talking about a movie that doesn't... No, it's not a joke. No, he's like screenshotted my tweets, and they got the quantum physicist consultant on the movie to come over and start tweeting at me, and we've been going back and forth talking about the second law of thermodynamics and how their script is sloppy. That's 100% real. Ed Solomon and I and Spiros, whatever his name, I think is it Cal State or whatever, we've been going back and forth all week as we record this.
I'm amazed that Ed Solomon has picked your particular complaint about the film out and has decided to take you to task over it.
We will talk about it offline at a different time, because I think you're going to be on the same page as me if I know you at all.
Okay. All right. Well, we shall.
I look forward to listening to your review. I encourage all our binge lords to go ahead and check it out. I've recorded a review 3 times on Bill and Ted Face the Music, and they're so incendiary they'll never be released. Because I think Ed Solomon, the last one I recorded, I think Ed Solomon would sue me if I put it on the internet.
It's gotten
personal between us, and I don't know how. Why the fuck is the co-creator of Bill and Ted out for blood with binge movies? I don't know. Maybe I pointed out his shoddy script writing. This is the guy who wrote Mom and Dad Saved the World, after all. So,
I reviewed an Australian film, a little one called Danger Close, The Battle of Long Tan, I think it was called. And I gave it a positive review, sort of, you know, 7 out of 10, 3.5 stars. But I pointed out a couple of what I thought were weak elements of the script. And one of those was, you know, we're in 2019. We're at a place where just telling one version of one side of events seems unhelpful. Anyway, the producer of the film jumped all over me on Twitter and was like, wrong! The Australian public doesn't want to know about the other side of the fight in 1968, you stupid cunt. Search for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews and you'll find us everywhere.
I'm just saying fuck Ed Solomon is what I'm saying. Now, where can the good people...
So hashtag fuck Ed Solomon. Start that one, see if it trends.
You see, this is why I can't release those other podcasts.
But we're releasing this one because he won't listen because it's about I'm thinking of ending things, so you're safe.
Oh, yeah. Meaning, like, if 7 people are going to listen to it. All right, buddy. Well, it's always good to have you on. I think we'll be seeing you again on our show in the not-too-distant future. I think maybe if the stars align, I will be on the Countdown in the not-too-distant future as well.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much for having me on and for tolerating my simplistic view of film.
Now, in fairness, last final thoughts. It's later in the evening here, and I'm a couple of bourbons in, and you're just waking up because of the time difference. So really,
it's always the way it works, though.
It is, but you know, maybe if you had a couple more cup of coffees, maybe we could get those synapses firing.
Thanks again, dude. Have all the best and good luck, Ed Solomon. You're gonna need it.
Until next time, binge on.